What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
We all need a break from the constant cycle to learn something new, to gain new perspectives. The Great Courses Plus streaming service is an excellent resource to expand our knowledge on a variety of subjects or pick up a new hobby. I've been enjoying The Great Courses Plus while researching this season of Flashback. Lectures like Play Ball, The Rise of Baseball as America's Pastime, History of the Supreme Court, and Battlefield Europe have helped me connect the dots on several stories from history. Right now, they're giving our listeners a special limited-time offer, a free month of unlimited access to their entire library. Sign up now through our special URL. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/Aussie. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/OZY. thegreatcoursesplus.com/Aussie. It was the rant that launched a movement, and it began on a cable television news segment.
How many of you people want to pay for your neighbor's mortgage that has an extra bathroom and can't pay their bills? Raise their hand!
At CNBC's Rick Santelli, on the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade in February 2009, he's upset about the Obama administration's plan to spend $75 billion of taxpayer money to rescue homeowners underwater on their mortgages as a result of the financial crisis.
President Obama, are you listening? We're thinking of having a Chicago Tea Party in July. All you capitalists that want to show up to Lake Michigan, I'm going to start organizing.
2 months later, on April 15th, Tax Day, more than 750 so-called Tea Parties were held across the country. Some drew crowds in the thousands.
This is real. These people are here, and they're here to stay.
It's now been 10 years since the Tea Party movement engineered a surprising takeover of American politics. Santelli's rant and the resulting protests, along with a mysterious political action group called Americans for Prosperity, would shift the political landscape in Washington.
CNN is now ready to make a major projection. The Republicans will take control of the House of Representatives.
During the 2010 midterm election, the Republican Party, fueled by the energy of the new Tea Party movement, picked up a net gain of 63 seats in the House of Representatives, the largest swing in more than 60 years. But the Republicans' triumph in the House really began more than a century earlier, with another house, a little house on the prairie. Thanks for joining me again on Flashback, a podcast from Aussie. I'm Sean Braswell. In today's episode, we explore the intersection of art and politics with the story of a remarkable mother and daughter duo who remade children's literature in America and helped kickstart a new political era in the process. It's a tale of hidden authorship, subversive ideology, and of course, that indomitable American frontier spirit. Little House on the Prairie. an unforgettable tale of pioneer life on the American frontier in all of its grit and glory. About 60 million copies of the Little House books by Laura Ingalls Wilder have been sold since the first one came out in 1932, and the stories have inspired millions of children and adults around the world.
The first Little House book is set in Wisconsin. Laura was born in Wisconsin.
This is Christine Woodside, a journalist and the author of Libertarians on the Prairie. The Little House books are based on Laura Ingalls Wilder's own childhood on the prairie. The first book was called Little House in the Big Woods.
In Wisconsin, they owned property. They lived near a town called Pepin, which is situated on a section of Mississippi River that widens and is known as Lake Pepin.
Today, there is a replica cabin located on the side of the highway in the rough spot where their actual cabin stood.
But it was a very wooded area. It was a sparsely populated area. Farmers had to clear the trees in order to farm, and the Ingalls family had fields and clearings where they did their farming.
The actual details of the Ingalls family life are in many ways harsher than the autobiographical Little House books.
The first book, Little House in the Big Woods, really captures the feeling of happy prosperity for the Ingalls family, and I do think that's fairly close to the way life actually was for them, although obviously it's idealized. Farming is a hard life.
But it made for some compelling stories.
I got interested in the books as a child, of course. I read them obsessively again and again, and I began to study them to try to understand what made them so good.
Woodside hoped to write a biography of Laura Ingalls Wilder.
I admired her. I was fascinated with her farm columns for the Missouri Ruralist. I wanted to be like her. She had a temper. She was strong. She loved nature. She had a kind of instinctive connection to natural rhythms around the farms where she lived. I wanted to be like that.
But the more she read about Laura Ingalls Wilder, her life, and her writing process, the more she came to realize that there was really a second woman behind the Little House books.
As I began to study the papers, I began to really dig into what papers are left, I realized that I needed to write a book about two women, because the Laura I admired so much was a constructed character as a result of a collaboration between Laura and her daughter, Rose Wilder Lane.
More on that fateful collaboration in a minute. Laura Ingalls and her husband, Almanzo Wilder, moved to the Dakota Territory during the 1880s. They had Rose soon after. It was a hard life.
The droughts and the kind of natural high desert climate took over pretty soon after the family had gotten there, and they never really had a successful crop. They had a lot of loss, a fire and crop loss and a baby who died.
When Rose was seven, they moved to Missouri and tried to establish a farm.
Rose was sort of ashamed that she came from a poor farm family. She felt that her clothes were not as nice as the clothes of the girls in town. She was sent into school on a donkey. She didn't always have shoes.
But Rose was a smart kid with a gift for language, and she would become the family's first published writer.
She made a name for herself writing these serial profiles of famous people who would come through town.
Most of Rose's biographical work centered on the same theme, a person of humble origins whose strength and courage allowed them to overcome poverty and adversity to achieve greatness. And Rose had done pretty well herself to overcome her own hard childhood. She even spent some years in Paris and Europe during the 1920s, like so many other writers of her generation, from Ernest Hemingway to Gertrude Stein. But by the late 1920s, she had returned home to her parents' farm in Missouri.
At that point, Rose was living back on the farm and sort of running an informal writer's colony. She had women writing friends come and stay for months at a time.
Her mother, Laura, was living in semi-retirement at the time. Then, disaster struck.
In 1929, the stock market crashed, and they both lost all their investments. And they were basically desperate to make some money for the family. So Rose said to Laura, "Why don't you go back to that story of your life thing, and let's see if we can get this published."
And so from economic hardship came a tale that was perfect for the Great Depression that followed. Laura quickly set to work.
She sat down with several notebook tablets, sort of dime store tablets, and wrote her life story down from start to finish.
Laura wrote about living on the open prairie, traveling in covered wagons, encountering wild animals, and more. She wrote constantly, almost 200 pages.
Rose took her mother's notes and she edited and condensed and fixed and rewrote and made it into a long magazine piece. Rose always, as she put it, ran them through her typewriter. That was how she edited Laura.
But writing the stories down was only half the battle. Rose tried to sell them to a number of magazine editors. No one would buy it.
Rose then went to a party with some old publishing and writing friends of hers, at which she met a children's editor who was interested in a portion of the story.
So Rose went to work.
Rose, without telling Laura what she was doing, took the section from the Big Woods of Wisconsin, as the family called it. She took the section from the Wisconsin years, and she wrote a children's manuscript called When Grandma Was a Little Girl.
The editor loved how it turned out.
And that was how it started. The first book, Little House in the Big Woods, came out in 1932. It was a great success, and readers and the publisher began to ask for more.
Initially, Rose and Laura had thought this would stop after one book, but the demand was such that they were asked to keep producing new ones, 8 in total.
So Laura and Rose were secretly collaborating on these books for 13 years.
But they kept their collaboration a secret. Few knew the involved role that Rose took in editing her mother's manuscripts. Why?
I think that the two women thought that Rose's role should not matter. Rose was in the background. She was helping her mother do this project. And it was also a problem of narration. If Laura and Rose had had both their names on the cover, readers would have been confused over which of the two of them was the main character. And the power of that, the power of it being the true story of Laura's life, with Laura as the author, would have been lost.
The American public, suffering through a depression, was captivated by the tales of survival and persistence. There was a raw authenticity to the stories that could not be fabricated.
The details of Laura Ingalls Wilder's childhood in the Little House books are fairly authentic, and that's because Laura herself insisted during the collaboration with her daughter on the books that they be as authentic as possible. So the details of life, farming, the way they cured meat, the way they harvested food, the way they packed the wagon, the way they built houses, all that stuff is authentic.
But Rose Wilder Lane didn't just edit and revise her mother's stories. Gradually, she took a role in shaping their viewpoint and their ideals, even their politics. She started to infuse their pages with her own burgeoning brand of libertarianism. The Little House books became subtle, but very real pieces of political persuasion, and they would help serve as a launching pad for a broader social movement that would ultimately be helmed by the two brothers from the Kansas Prairie who were themselves just children at the time of the book's original publication, Charles and David Koch. That's next on Flashback. Do you have an interesting tale about unintended consequences from history or your own life? Please share it with us by emailing flashback@ozzy.com. That's flashback@ozy.com. As we've seen previously on Flashback, the Great Depression changed a lot of things in America, and so did the response to it by the administration of President Franklin Roosevelt. This is Roosevelt addressing the nation in March 1933.
I have no expectation of making a hit every time I combat. What I seek is the highest possible batting average, not only for myself, but for the team.
But Roosevelt could not make everyone on the team happy. and a lot of Americans resented his new deal, including Rose Wilder Lane. Christine Woodside again.
Rose really hated Franklin D. Roosevelt and the New Deal because she felt that he was trying to make America a socialist country.
Rose didn't like the New Deal relief programs for the poor or the new price and supply controls on farming and grain.
So that was the root of it. And this was all during the early 30s when her anger began. And this was also when they were writing the Little House books.
Woodside says that as a result, self-reliance became the Wilder family business.
The Little House books were celebrating a simple, self-sufficient, courageous life that was based on Laura's real life. But some of the scenes in several of the books were fleshed out to really underscore the idea of freedom and independence of the individual.
In some of the later books, Rose added details and dialogue to scenes that helped promote this new pioneer spirit. For example, there's a scene in one book, The Long Winter, in which a storekeeper named Loftus wants to overcharge starving townspeople for the last stock of wheat. So Laura's father, Pa Ingalls, tries to reason with Loftus.
Mr. Loftus says, "That wheat's mine, and I've got a right to charge any price I want to for it." And I'm reading right out of The Long Winter. "That's so, Loftus, you have," Mr. Ingalls agreed with him. "This is a free country, and every man's got a right to do as he pleases with his own property." He said to the crowd, "You know that's a fact, boys." And he went on, "Don't forget, every one of us is free and independent, Loftus. This winter won't last forever, and maybe you want to go on doing business after it's over. If you've got a right to do as you please, we've got a right to do as we please. It works both ways." So there you are, a free market lesson right in the middle of a starvation scene on in a prairie town. This is capitalism, you know?
Rose's views on personal freedom and limited government did not just find expression in the Little House books.
Rose worked for years on this book that was designed to be her magnum opus called The Discovery of Freedom, Man's Struggle Against Authority. And it was published in 1943, the same year that the last of the Little House book series came out.
The book is really a somewhat select reading of the history of Western civilization, one that focuses on moments in the past, like the American Revolution, when people attempted to organize a state that would allow for a wider scope of personal liberty.
The book sold almost no copies when it first came out, but it was embraced by a group of mainly business people who felt that it illustrated the beauty of capitalism when you're not messing it up.
The work became something of a political cult classic.
And so the book kind of took on a life of its own beyond the book itself. And today, the libertarian political movement will refer to Rose Wilder Lane's book, The Discovery of Freedom, as sort of an early Bible of the libertarian movement.
And if The Discovery of Freedom was the Bible, then a man named Roger Lee McBride was Rose's main disciple. McBride met the much older writer when he was a teenager in Connecticut.
Roger learned free market principles at Rose's knee, and he took her ideas out into the world, like a flag that he was carrying with him. He inherited everything of Rose's.
McBride became a champion of the libertarian movement. He was a genial, somewhat portly gentleman with well-coiffed gray hair and large-rimmed glasses. Here he expands on what that movement means in an episode of the television talk show Firing Line in 1976.
"Our fundamental belief is that every individual ought to be free to conduct his or her life the way that person sees fit, so long as he or she is peaceful and doesn't impose on others by force or fraud."
Roger McBride ran for president in 1976 as the Libertarian Party candidate. He won 0.2% of the popular vote. More on that in a moment. What McBride is perhaps better known for is the television show he created 2 years before he ran for president. Thanks to McBride, the Little House books would become an iconic 1970s television show starring Michael Landon as Pa Ingalls. But McBride was not the only libertarian that Rose Wilder influenced. Another was a man named Robert Lefebvre. Lefebvre, who had dropped out of college himself, founded a very influential school, Christine Woodside.
In the early 1960s, he started a school in Colorado called the Freedom School. It was housed in a log building, and people, adults, would go for 2-week sessions and learn about really the extreme end of what it would mean to give people full liberty.
We're going to have some fun here this week.
This is Robert Lefebvre addressing attendees at one of those Freedom School retreats. He's got wavy silver hair with a bushy mustache and is wearing big eyeglasses and a bolo necktie. Lefebvre was quite a character. He had been an actor, a soldier, a traveling salesman, a TV anchorman, and more.
I should explain a little bit about myself. As you can tell by my name, Lefebvre, there is some French in there somewhere. And we French are a very volatile people, as you know, and we tend to become explosive and dramatic, and we wave our arms and shout, and I do these things without sometimes knowing that I'm doing them. I really am a very nice fellow, but you will not know that at times.
Lefebvre encouraged students to bring sturdy shoes and pack Western wear. In between sessions, they could ride horses, play volleyball, and pitch horseshoes. But that was not the purpose of the Freedom School.
The whole purpose of our session is to make use of our minds and to get them into gear to take an entirely different look at man and the situation that he is in.
It wasn't long before Lefebvre's renegade school appeared on the radar of another prominent libertarian.
Rose caught wind of the Freedom School, and she was really excited about it, but it was struggling financially. So she gave them a big donation.
Rose Wilderlane became really involved in libertarian politics.
This is Stephanie Sharp, a political consultant from Kansas and the founder of the firm Sharp Connections.
Because of the significant income that she had from the Little House royalties, was able to donate quite a bit of money to the Freedom School.
Rose Wilderlane's donation helped keep the Freedom School afloat, and she grew more involved in its operation. Robert Lefebvre was so grateful he renamed the school's main log building Rose Wilder Lane Hall in 1962. Rose herself attended the dedication ceremony. Christine Woodside.
One of the only recordings of Rose's voice that exists is of her giving a speech at the Freedom School.
The speech was called The Scourge of Collectivism. The recording quality is not great, but you can hear Rose cover a number of topics, including communism.
From the beginning of known human history, which is about 60 centuries, people have been predominantly communists. The very early savages are always communists.
The libertarian principles articulated at the Freedom School soon started to spread within another group, the Republican Party.
The notion was always underlying all this that people, if left to their own devices, will act in a way that furthers the common good. It's an idea that Ronald Reagan talked about, and Ronald Reagan was enamored of a lot of these ideas too.
And he was very good at spreading them, including via humor.
I think you all know that I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
But it was not just Ronald Reagan who took up the mantle of libertarianism that was first hoisted by Rose Wilder Lane and the Freedom School. Two men who have arguably shaped modern American politics more than any other figures were not only familiar with the Freedom School, they were students there. One summer day in the early 1960s, a 20-something young man from Wichita, Kansas, drove up the dirt road that led into the foothills of the Rampart Mountain Range between Colorado Springs and Denver. He saw a compound with a 3-story lodge, log cabins, horse stables, and walking trails. It looked like a summer camp. But this was Robert Lefebvre's Freedom School, the mecca for the American libertarian movement, the place that Rose Wilder Lane had influenced with her ideas and saved with her money. The young man, Charles, had heard about the school from his younger brother, David, who had just attended his own 2-week session. Christine Woodside.
Two of the early students at the Freedom School were Charles and David Koch. if you can believe that.
Yes, those Koch brothers. Charles Koch, the chairman and CEO of Koch Industries, and his late brother David Koch became libertarians in their 20s. And Christine Woodside says you can trace those political origins back directly to the Freedom School and Rose Wilder Lane. Remember Roger Lee McBride, the presidential candidate slash television producer who was Rose's political disciple?
McBride ran for president as a libertarian in 1976, and the Koch brothers did what they could to campaign for him. And so this is one of the crucial bits of evidence that helps you sort of see the connection that the Koch brothers have back to the Freedom School and the ideas.
Deep in the archives of the Hoover Library at Stanford, Christine Woodside discovered a letter that Charles Koch had sent out to powerful oil industry executives endorsing McBride for president in 1976. It begins,
"Dear Rocky Mountain Oil Man, I have been a supporter of libertarian activities since the early 1960s and have found them to be the only effective way to combat the rapidly increasing governmental control over all aspects of our lives."
Charles Koch's brand of libertarianism had a very particular source.
And so what he meant when he said he had been a supporter of libertarian activities, he meant that he had attended classes at the Freedom School in Colorado. And that, of course, is the school that Rose was so deeply involved with.
Rose Wilder Lane died in 1968, but her disciples at the Freedom School, including the Koch brothers, would continue to push her ideas to a broader audience.
The Koch brothers stayed involved in the Libertarian Party until the early 80s. In fact, David Koch was the vice presidential candidate on the Libertarian ticket in 1980.
Neither Roger McBride nor David Koch had any success on the ballot, but they did succeed at starting a revolution in conservative thought.
It is very strong. This branch of thinking in the Republican Party, led by these early thinkers who had solidified their ideas at the Freedom School, this guided the branch of the Republican Party that brought Ronald Reagan to power.
After David Koch lost his election, the Koch brothers began to move toward more mainstream political circles and to wield their influence on the conservative free market branch of the Republican Party. Stephanie Sharp.
When he was on the ballot as a libertarian candidate, you certainly realized that the Libertarian Party wasn't going anywhere. And so from then, you know, it's pretty easy to look at the Republican Party and say, you know what, if we plug enough money into this thing, we could almost make the party adapt to what we view as Republicanism.
And they put a lot of money into it. But the Koch brothers decided to work behind the scenes and not in front of the cameras this time.
With the Republican Party as an established brand, it was a good training ground, and they could come in and make a significant financial impact. And so they, you know, started these Club for Growth and Americans for Prosperity.
Thanks to nonprofit political action groups like these and the hundreds of millions of dollars they raised, the Koch brothers went from political fringe role players to Republican Party royalty. But they didn't just raise money. The Koch brothers pumped millions of dollars into a vast network of conservative think tanks, endowed professorships, lecture series, college programs, and more that espouse their same libertarian free market economics beliefs. It was like the Freedom School times a billion. And then, of course, came the piece de resistance of the libertarian movement that Rose Wilder Lane helped create, the Tea Party. More on that when we come back. We all need a break from the constant cycle, to learn something new, to gain new perspectives. The Great Courses Plus streaming service is an excellent resource to expand our knowledge on a variety of subjects, or pick up a new hobby. I've been enjoying the Great Courses Plus while researching this season of Flashback. Lectures like Play Ball, The Rise of Baseball as America's Pastime, History of the Supreme Court, and Battlefield Europe have helped me connect the dots on several stories from history. Right now, they're giving our listeners a special limited-time offer, a free month of unlimited access to their entire library. Sign up now through our special URL, go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/Aussie. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/OZY. thegreatcoursesplus.com/Aussie.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
I am the Arizona Director of Americans for Prosperity. We are a group that has got 25 chapters around the country. We're getting more chapters every year, and we are building up a grassroots army in this country.
This is Tom Jenny speaking to the Arizona branch of the Tea Party in 2009.
A grassroots army to take on big government and the trend toward bigger and bigger government in this country.
In the wake of the collapse of the American economy in 2008 and the subsequent government bailouts, it felt to many Americans like the U.S. was on the verge of undergoing a repeat of what happened during the Great Depression that Rose Wilder Lane had experienced. And leaders like Jenny were quick to point that out.
So this happened in the 1920s. This government-created bank creates a bubble. The bubble bursts. We have the famous crash of 1929. So we have a problem that's been created by government. What does government then offer us as a solution to that problem? More government. So you get guys like...
Crowds like this were forming all across the country. It was the perfect moment to grow an army of new libertarians in America and usher in a new era of limited government. And thanks to the existing network of well-funded organizations that the Koch brothers had spent years cultivating, the Tea Party seemed to expand like magic across the country. It felt as if the Koch brothers had brewed a movement out of thin air.
And the Tea Party is back. Close to 40 protests springing up across the country today. Americans sick of government bailouts and wasteful spending, taking their message to the streets, and it's spreading fast.
In 2010, thanks in no small part to the Tea Party and the work of groups like Americans for Prosperity, the Republican Party won a landslide victory in the House of Representatives.
CNN is now ready to make a major projection. The Republicans will take control of the House of Representatives.
And so the seeds of a movement that had first taken root within the pages of a children's book series and been cultivated in small group seminars in the Colorado mountains had finally borne political fruit almost 80 years later. Christine Woodside.
These ideas get deep into your
skin, under your skin when you read them as a young person. And many of us who love the Little House books, I find myself, I consider myself a progressive, you know, and I'm not registered in any party, I'm a journalist. But the idea of having free, of being free and independent, I like it.
The Freedom School seminars and the Little House books spoke to an ideal of courage, perseverance, and liberty that still resonates today. But how would Rose Wilder Lane herself feel about the big government regulations that the Koch brothers and Tea Party have waged war on?
I mean, I think she would be really irritated with it. I think she would think that, you know, regulations are unnecessary and you really just need to assume that everyone's going to do the right thing.
Woodside herself is not convinced.
I don't see a lot of proof in American history that people naturally do the right thing for either the environment or necessarily the economy.
And she recognizes that might put her at odds with both Rose and Laura Ingalls Wilder.
I'm uncomfortable with the thought that both of these women would probably not like me very much, which makes me a little sad because I like them. But there you have it.
Flashback is written and hosted by me, Sean Braswell, senior writer and executive producer at Ozzy. It was produced by Robert Kulos, Tracy Moran, Yorio DeGizua, and Shannon Williamson. Chris Hoff engineered our show. Special thanks to the crew at iHeartRadio Podcast Networks, especially Sophie Lichterman and Jack O'Brien. Make sure to subscribe to Flashback on the iHeartRadio app or listen wherever you get your podcasts. Flashback is the latest podcast from Ozzy, a modern media company producing original TV series, festivals, news, and podcasts for curious people. Ozzy's unique storytelling focuses on the new and the next, whether that's forward-looking news and features, bold new perspectives on TV, or brand new ways of looking at history. For today's lecture note, we look at another big fan of Little House on the Prairie, Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh. As a young man, McVeigh was a huge fan of the frontier television drama that was based on the books. McVeigh's favorite episode? The one where Michael Landon as Pa Ingalls tries to stop the other farmers from rioting when a government tax hike threatens their farms. As the farmers complain about the tax assessor, one of them makes a startling prediction.
You just mark my words. Someday they will tax a man for what he earns.
An income tax?
Yeah.
Never happened in a thousand years.
Yeah, you just did.
To dive deeper, head to ozzy.com/flashback. That's ozy.com/flashback. There you can find my other lecture notes from today's episode, featuring extended interviews, links to further reading, and more information on unintended consequences and the ideology of the Little House books, as well as links to other hidden stories from history, uncovered by me and other reporters at Ozzy. Need a break from the constant cycle, to learn something new, to gain new perspectives. The Great Courses Plus streaming service is an excellent resource to expand our knowledge on a variety of subjects, or pick up a new hobby. I've been enjoying The Great Courses Plus while researching this season of Flashback. Lectures like Play Ball, The Rise of Baseball as America's Pastime, History of the Supreme Court, and Battlefield Europe have helped me connect the dots on several stories from history. Right now, they're giving our listeners a special limited-time offer, a free month of unlimited access to their entire library. Sign up now through our special URL. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/Ozzy. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/OZY. thegreatcoursesplus.com/Ozzy.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.